were sharing a little bit about, I guess language you might use would be a spiritual journey over time. Is that comfortable language?
Yes.
Okay. You mind sharing a little bit of that with us today?
My journey was one that's probably true for many people in that I was born into it. And the environment I was born into was very much a Protestant Christian life. My father was a minister. He had been raised as a Mennonite, joined the preaching community as the United Brethren, which became United Evangelical Brethren, the UBs, and then ultimately became United Methodist with the convergence of those groups. I really had no idea growing up, even in the college age, that there were things out there. I knew of Catholicism and all the rest of it, but it was really just an assumption of...
Well, hello everybody, welcome back to another edition of A Place in the Conversation. We're glad that you've joined us today. So Nick, what have you been up to the last few days?
Well, see, I went on Sunday to the Laurels Preserve out on Unionville, Coatesville Road, and we did what was called a stewardship walk and walked around the property and looked at the things that they're doing to make it more sustainable and, you know, environmentally friendly.
What exactly is the Laurels? I don't know that I've heard of it.
It's a preserve. It's part of what was the King Ranch, and it was thousands of acres. And the Brandywine Conservancy bought it and has an easement on it.
Great.
So it's a beautiful property.
Great. That sounds fantastic.
Buck and Doe Run come together on that property and then flow down into the Brandywine.
Okay. All right. Wow. That sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
That sounds beautiful. And if I remember correctly, Sunday was a good day.
It was a beautiful day. Yeah, we've had a beautiful week, really.
Yeah, we really have. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this has been a good fall, and I'm voting and pushing and praying and pleading that we move right through, till February and March.
Yeah,
Me too. Let's keep on moving the same kind of weather.
Right into spring.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
There you go. That's it. Well, Nick, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest today?
I'm happy to do that, Dan. It's my friend Tim. Tim and I worked together years ago at DuPont, and actually used to run together at lunchtime for a number of years. And since we've both retired, we've spent a lot of time together talking about different things that are of interest to both of us. And a lot of the things that we talk about are sort of connected in a way. We talk about religion and faith and spirituality and sort of what is the meaning of life. And we talk about Buddhism and mindfulness and meditation. And there's sort of a theme there. Consciousness, maybe I said that.
Good. Well, Tim, we spent a few minutes talking before we hit the red record button here, and so that's I'm interested to hear, the conversation that we have together, and you were sharing a little bit about, I guess language you might use would be a spiritual journey over time. Is that comfortable language?
Yes.
Okay. You mind sharing a little bit of that with us today?
No, I'm happy to be here, and I appreciate your time. My journey was one that's probably true for many people in that I was born into it. And the environment I was born into was very much a Protestant Christian life. My father was a minister. He had been raised as a Mennonite, joined the preaching community as a United Brethren, which became United Evangelical Brethren, the UBs, and then ultimately became United Methodist with the convergence of those groups. I really had no idea growing up, even in the college age, that there were things out there. I knew of Catholicism and all the rest of it, but it was really just an assumption of living in the Bible Belt. I grew up in Lancaster County, and just when you leave that and go to some other parts of the world, or even other parts of the United States, you look back and it's, wow, that really was a very controlled, very totally fixated focus on religion. I just didn't know anything different from that. When I got into college, I was away from it, and I just basically stopped going to church. It wasn't that I was on a path to prove anything. It was just with everything going on. I later got married, and with the onset of family, felt the need to bring them into a church environment. It was just a normal process. My wife was Catholic. That was more important to her than it being in a Protestant environment was to me. So we were in a Catholic environment. I ended up converting to become an active participant. I felt it was important for my children to see me an active part rather than just a participant. So I became a Eucharistic minister and on the parish council and those types of things. The thing that kind of moved me away from, I'll say religion rather than Christianity, was the Vietnam War initially. With all the protests going on, I was in college in the late 60s, 70s, when that was very active, and I just could not mentally make a bridge between what I was taught Christianity was and what I saw the leadership of Christians doing within the context of the war and support of the war. Marriage, getting involved again, distance of time, I had kind of gotten away from that, and 9/11 happened. The response to 9/11 in Iran and Iraq, or not Iran, Iraq, but Afghanistan and Iraq, threw me right back into the dichotomy between what I believe and what was actually being lived by the, at that time, the Catholic Church. So once again, I kind of moved away from that space. Children had grown. It really wasn't the connection that drove me back initially. And that's kind of been a repeating pattern in my life. So we get to today, and we see what's going on in this country and the role the church is playing in driving toward a theocracy rather than a democracy and separation of church and state. And once again, I find myself just really overwhelmed with how much religion is the core of damage that's being done. And so that's the journey. And in the course of that time, I've been in and out of studying Eastern religions and Buddhism specifically, and really came to a much more personalized view for searching for awareness and staying mindful of what I am at my core and letting go of the ego. And that's the kind of conversations that Nick and I have on a regular basis.
I'm not surprised that you have those conversations with Nick. That's some of the same conversations that we have. Yeah. So
it's all Nick's fault.
It's all Nick's fault. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we can blame Nick, right? No, we can be thankful that Nick is there to have those conversations, because I think he helps us He helps us always keep that in the fore. At least he does it for me as well. You know, so as I listen to you, you know, share your story, like I connect with the, I connect with a couple things. You know, you talked about going to college and then, you know, wow, wait a minute, there's the whole wide world and I can do, you know, whatever. And maybe I don't need to be, you know, in church on Sunday morning. And I remember, you know, when I was in college, the first Sunday morning that I woke up, and it was after had been out doing stuff late on Saturday night, and I rolled over and I started to get up to go to church, and I thought, man, I'm tired. And I realized that there was nobody at my door knocking on my door, like my father did at home, saying, hey, get yourself up, we're going to church. And I went back to sleep. And it took me, you know, like, wow, okay, I like this. And I got into that habit of, you know, sleeping through Sunday. And it wasn't until I went back home again, and my father knocked on the door on Sunday morning and said, hey, we're going to church. And I, okay, yeah, all right, I know where I am now. And we got to church, and I saw things there that I knew I was missing. And that's, I thought, okay, this is what you've been missing. And you have to decide, is this of value? And are you going to find it for yourself somewhere? Or are you just going to let it disappear? And for me, that was a defining moment of taking what had been my parents' faith and then saying, no, I'm gonna figure out what faith looks like for me. And in the end, my faith and my father's faith look very, very different, right? And our expressions of it look very different. But I think that's part of each person's journey. And I think that's a healthy thing.
It's interesting because when you go back to church, there's a familiarity because you've been raised in it. Yeah. You grew up in it. It was a part of your DNA almost. And it's interesting because my college experience wasn't so much that I wasn't looking for it as much as I became aware that there were other religions.
Yeah.
There were other activities. There were other ways to be moral.
Yeah.
And so while you go back and it's very familiar, it's just not because it's familiar, it's what is it really doing for me?
Exactly.
And the trouble that I experienced through some of the things I said earlier was the dichotomy between what was spoken and what was action. Because that's really a major problem today, as I see it anyway.
Yeah.
I was interested, you're talking about faith, and I guess, I mean, faith is belief in something that you can't prove, right? Now, Tim and I are both scientists, and science is something that can be tested, and religion cannot be. Religion is about values and morals and ethics, and science is about testing facts. So, what do you mean when you say faith?
I think for me, I think faith, for me, it all centers on the teachings of Jesus, right? That's very important to me. And I think, you know, Tim, you're alluding to the fact that sometimes, you know, we share some of the teachings of Jesus and then we act in a way that is very opposite of those teachings. And that is nothing short of troubling and disturbing. And you sit and you wonder, well, why am I here if Jesus is talking about peace and of love and about caring for each other, And then yet some of the people who are in positions of power and of authority, boy, they certainly don't move that way. They don't act that way. And sometimes they're just downright harmful in what they do to individuals, what they do to the wider community, what they do to whole ethnic groups or whatever, you know, however you want to look at it and talk about it. That's just downright troubling. And that's all of us, I think anybody who's been a part of any kind of faith tradition or any kind of spiritual community and has been intellectually honest has at some time had to wrestle with those, with that reality. But I think, Nick, for me, the faith piece is, you know, I'm 55 years old now. And my journey has, you know, it started, you know, much like Tim's, you know, look, I had faith because my parents had faith, and I looked at my parents, and they're the ones that modeled what it was for me, and I adapted and took on their faith for my own. But since then, I've had to make it my own. Like I've had the, and there's been, you know, when you say that, you know, science tests things and sees things to be true, I would say that throughout my life, I have seen in my own life times where my faith has been tested, and I have found it to be of value, and I have found it to be true. And especially as I've walked through difficult seasons of life, and so it is a tested thing for me, and I think the more that we test it, and the more that we examine it, and the deeper that we examine it, and really wrestle with it, the more real it becomes, and. Go ahead, Tim.
It's interesting because as you were speaking there, there's this whole thing around group behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's been studied. Individuals will have one set of morality, and they get into a group, and suddenly there's a whole nother level of morality or lack thereof that's demonstrated. And it's almost playing out at the organizational level, like you've said. Nick and I have had conversations where we talk about what's the value of religion. And, you know, on an individual level, you know, it helps people get through trying times, facing death, all these very significant parts of life. But you look at it at a group level, and you suddenly see power, control, manipulation playing out in very, very, you know, overwhelming ways. And so there's this real activity around individually, what are you doing with your faith? What does faith do for you? How does that benefit you? Versus how is that faith manipulated in a larger play to build and maintain power. Yeah. And I think that's one of the dimensions of the whole story that is very interesting to look at.
Well, Dan, it seemed to me like you are equating your faith with the teachings of Jesus. Okay, and I think that if Jesus came back today and saw the church, which has been created in his name, he'd be very disappointed.
There's no doubt that there would be parts and pieces of what he would look at, and he would sit there and be extremely disappointed. I mean, and don't forget, you know, as you read through the scriptures, you know, there's a time when Jesus walks into the temples and he overturns tables.
Yeah, right.
And there's a righteous indignation and a righteous anger there. And what he says, you know, in that passage, in that story that gets told, is, look, you've taken this relationship with God, that this sacred thing, and you've turned my father's house, God's house, into a den of thieves. You've turned it into a place where you are taking advantage of people who are just easily taken advantage of.
In my father's name.
In my father's name, and I will not have it. And he turns the tables upside down, and he chases the people out. And so there's no doubt in my mind that if Jesus was to come back today, there'd be a lot of stuff that he would look at. There's probably stuff that he would look at in my own ministry and just say, what in the world were you thinking? What were you doing? And I think the truth is that it's just we're all broken people. And we get susceptible to things like power and influence and all of that. It's when our ego, Tim, you mentioned the ego before, when our ego gets in the way and it becomes more about me and less about what God wants to accomplish, less about what Jesus' teachings would be, and less about caring for others, then absolutely, certainly, things just go totally, totally awry. And then it takes people with great, strong voices and moral clarity to stand up and to say, This is not what it ought to be.
So my father in my upbringing and throughout his life, I would describe as a true local pastor. Mm-hmm. He lived what Jesus taught him to live by. I saw, being on the inside of the church, I saw how the denomination, the leadership of the denomination, the politics of the denomination, were just horrible to him in treatment throughout his life as he struggled with a wife that had MS and was deteriorating. And he was doing what he could for his community, for his local church, at the same time that the denomination was not only not helping him, but actually going against and actually at points lying to him about things that would be to help him out and not coming through. And I think that's really what you're referring to in many ways. There was another thing I was going to say, but I forgot what it was.
You're in good company there.
What, the losing the thought?
Losing
the thought.
I had a brilliant thought.
And having it disappear.
Unfortunately.
There you go. Yeah. And I think that's the challenge.
But,
right?
But I mean, I think that's really, if you, I thought I had it back, but I didn't.
I think that's part of the challenge. Right. When we talk about spirituality and we talk about, trying to deepen that relationship with God, is that it's so easy to look and to find places where damage has been done. Right. And to point and say, well, see, that's wrong. And that's wrong. And that's bad. And that didn't measure up. And that's true everywhere. We live in a world where that happens all the time. And I guess I see part of our responsibility, I guess I see it as my responsibility, is to stand against that and just say, yeah, but okay, there's failure there, but I choose not to do that. And Spirit, help me avoid the pitfalls that exist there. Yeah.
I remember what I was going to say. Yeah. The One of the things that he spoke of, because we'd have conversations like this, and it was interesting to me. So he was born in 1912. He saw the church before and after the tax deferment came into existence in the United States. Huh. And he would always say, the worst thing that happened to religion in this country was when they passed that tax deferment, because it brought money into the church. Up until that time, the denominational or whatever the power structure for the churches were was very limited at the top, because there was no money to support it. There were, you know, efforts at the local level to build the church, to do outreach, to do those kinds of things that are part of what you think about as religion. But as soon as the money started really coming into the church because of that tax deferment, suddenly power came into play, politics came into play, the amount of money that would move from the local churches up to the denomination. And so in your experience, I'm assuming that was before you, but I'd be curious on how you think that plays out, because I don't think you can separate the money from the power, because money is power in a capitalist society.
Yeah, money, there's no doubt about it, right? Money is or influence is power, and that is
it's an evil.
It's an evil. Yeah, there's right. Yeah, there's just no way, there's absolutely no way around it, and it totally distracts from what I understand to be the calling of the church to live out the mission of Jesus. You know, there was a time I was looking for a church, right? I was looking for a church, and I was talking with a congregation, and we reached this point where they sent me their all their financial records, and this church had millions of dollars. I mean, millions of dollars set up in endowments and everything. And I read through the financials, and I'm just looking at it going, whoa, this is insane how much money these people. Now, they've been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. It was up in New England, and so there'd been years of people leaving money and all this and that. But they had millions of dollars laying around in different funds all over the place. And the head of the search committee called me, and he goes, well, he goes, I assume that you've received our packet. And I go, yes, I have. And he goes, I assume that you want to continue talking with us. And I laughed and I said, no, I'm not interested at all. And he goes, how can that possibly be? He goes, you saw our financials. How could you not want to be, you know, our pastor? Look at we have all this money. I said, exactly. Look at you. You have all that money. And the salary package you're paying your pastor is the worst that I've seen, you know, is the worst that I've seen yet. And it makes me wonder, you know, do you ever give anything to anybody in need because you have all of this money?
Yeah, it's obvious who you're worshiping.
Yeah, that's right. And he just started stuttering and stammering and then started yelling at me. And I said, well, see, here we go. I said, I just asked you two questions and you're yelling. And I said, I know everything I need to know about who you are and how you move. And I said, we just don't need to talk again. I would much rather serve with a group of impoverished people who you're wondering day by day by day, how are we going to pay the bills, but who have the heart for living out the message and the teaching of Jesus, than somebody who's got this huge bank account, because you're in the wrong place.
I overheard a discussion. We'll call it a discussion between two ministers. One was my father, and they were discussing their ideal congregation. The one was my father saying he really wanted a congregation that worked at developing a strong group of young people that had children and really developed the whole, you know, process of feeding the needs of the families. The other one was saying, no, I want a congregation rich in old people because they have money.
Yeah, well, see, and there's ego involved in that. There's allegiances to things other than the teachings of who Jesus is,
right.
Involved in all of that, and that's when we get ourselves in trouble. That's when we get caught, and it's for the longest time. I write books, and so I've got 3 different books that I've written, and for the longest time, I have resisted hiring a marketer to help get the word out about these books and everything. And the reason I resisted it is so hard is because I don't want to have that platform. I don't want to be that person that that's who that is. No, look, it's the message. It's not me, it's the message. And it's the teaching that comes out of the books. Don't point to me, point to the person who has the answers. And that person, I understand it to be, is the person of Jesus. So stay away from, being one of these elevated, look at me type of people. And I finally hired a marketer after looking for the right one, who was finally able to understand and say, you don't want to be the message. You just want to get these resources out. I said, absolutely. Because the ego has got to be totally out of it, or it just runs amok.
Yeah.
And there's a problem.
Yeah. Well, Our Buddhist discussions would say that that that's going to happen because the ego is going to be feeding itself.
Mm-hmm.
So recognizing the ego for what it is, which is totally a mental object that you've made up over the course of your life to survive and interact with society.
Yeah.
What I hear you saying is you want to stay tied to the awareness level.
I wanted to ask you a question, Tim, about something you said to me earlier, and this is related to what we've been talking about. But you and I have talked a lot about what is God, who is God,
mm-hmm.
And we've talked about, are we atheists or not? And you said that you wouldn't describe yourself as an atheist anymore. You would describe yourself as anti-religion. Could you say a little bit more about what that means?
I think we've been talking about in a large extent.
Right.
Because to me, if you have a belief in a God, whatever that may look like, and it's helping you be moral, it's helping you find your purpose in life, it's helping you interact with others. I cannot do anything other than support you in that activity. I don't care if it's Allah, if it's Jesus, whoever it is. When you move to the organizational level, when you think about religions of Christianity or Muslim, even Buddhism, if you look at the core of Buddhism, Buddha said, you need to do this. Don't come to me. Search yourself, find yourself. And in the process of thousands of years, there's a whole religion that's been developed in the form of Buddhism where they worship the Buddha. The Buddha did not want to be worshipped. And so here we are looking at organizations, different types of Christianity fought in Europe for hundreds and hundreds of years. This country was founded, people running away from it and trying to separate religion and the state because they knew religion, to me, is almost like an ego. It takes on its own existence. It's a mental construct. And it ends up feeding itself. What it does is good for itself, whether it's gathering money or fighting wars or backing politics. and moving into power structures. So I see myself very much against the organization of religions because I've looked critically through the history of our species. It's not good. It's all about power and control rather than the individual activity.
You know, I was just thinking, you could say that about a lot of organizations.
Absolutely.
Because as soon as they get big enough, you know, there's people who are seeking power.
Right.
Yeah.
And think about that in terms of tribalism. So you automatically have some level where you need an organization large enough so the individual can survive. You get beyond that, and now it's unnatural in terms of our evolutionary history. And so in the last couple hundred years, we've figured out how to corrupt that to the point where we can use it to gain for the tribe at the cost of the larger society. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's playing out today.
And there's no doubt about that, right? And I think if you look at it with any kind of intellectual honesty, and I think that's what it takes, right? You have to be able to look at it with an intellectual honesty and be able to sit back and say, okay, what's really happening here? What's really taking place? What's really going on? Then those things are pretty easily discernible. And the challenge for individuals, for myself, for you, for Nick, for everybody, is to figure out how do I feed that spiritual need that I have in a way that grows me and that benefits me and strengthens me and yet doesn't feed into the mistakes of the institution, you know, that's not an easy thing to do.
It's interesting to me as this conversation has played out. One of the things that I've reflected on many times over the last couple decades. I was taught two ways of praying. Maybe you were as well. Maybe both of you were. When I went to church at home before meals, you were taught to pray. It was out loud. It was in the presence of others. And it was one of those things that was moving into the organization or into the public sphere, if we can think about it that way. A little side note, the priest that was most involved, or my home parish when I was active in the Catholic Church, was always amazed at how well I prayed, was his comment. You're a good prayer. Now, Catholics, and I'm not demeaning any faith here or anything, but, you know, even the priests, it's like the prayer is written down. This is the prayer you're going to say at this point in the service. At this point, this is the prayer you use for this. That they were very scripted. Protestants, by nature, I think, were very ad lib. But he was always amazed with that. When I prayed for myself, when I prayed in silence, I was taught to listen.
Yeah. Yep.
Think about that.
Yeah.
And so automatically, as soon as we move into an organization, we're praying for others. We're praying for public. We're praying for ego. Hmm. When we pray for ourselves, we listen.
We listen.
And it's very much aligned with meditation. I think, you know, when I started meditating, I had a head start because I had been meditating for ever since, you know, my childhood, because prayer to me was actually meditation, as I've come to understand.
Yeah. And I think there's, and there's, that's just one place where I think there's windows for those people who want to step into it, right? For those kind of spiritual leaders who kind of want to step into it, to bring some of that into the community worship, who want to bring that into the institution. You know, when I was at First Baptist and the other churches that I served at, it was not uncommon for us to do, okay, here's how, that where it's time for our prayer, here's who we're going to be praying for, here's what we're going to do. Now we're going to be still and quiet for a few minutes, and this is your time to pray to God. And we'd sit there and be still and quiet for 3 minutes. You know, and wow, that is, you know.
Very different.
Very different.
Quakers.
Quakers, yeah. It's very, you know, and but yet it takes away from, it's not the, you're not feeding the ego, which says, oh, pastor, you prayed so well today, you know, or whatever. And it's just, mm-hmm. you're creating space for the Spirit to move. Right. You know, and the Quakers do a fabulous job at that. I mean, they are, that's a gift. You know, that piece of the kingdom of God brings to everybody else. And just the stillness and the quiet, the reflection, the listening, believing that in the midst of it, that the Spirit is going to speak.
And there are times when, you know, you need to be public in that prayer,
yeah.
but the need to be conscious of the ego risk,
yeah.
and stay focused on the true purpose.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, I went to a Quaker school, and I have a very high regard for the Quakers. But I don't think that they think of it as a time of prayer. They call it silent worship.
Yeah.
Hmm. And so there may be a lot of listening going on there, and just sort of sitting and trying to invoke the presence of God.
Yeah.
Which is not all that dissimilar from
meditation.
personal prayer or meditation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the prayer to convince God to do what you want Him to do.
Right.
It's let me listen for what the answer is.
Right. Someone wiser than myself said that when we pray, we're not trying to change God; we're trying to change ourselves.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I believe that to be true. But I don't know. I think more often than not, we're trying to convince God to do what we want God to do.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But the deeper thing that's taking place there is, you know, let's.
Well, and to your point, I mean, you're. I understood from what you said that was a little between us on the meditation side of not having the ego and rather acceptance.
It's not about me.
It's not about me. It's about accepting what is.
Yeah.
You know, and just, you know, from my experience, you know, one of the reasons that, you know, earlier during our conversation, I can say, look, from a scientific kind of way, can say, hey, look, I've tested, my faith has been tested, and I know it to be valuable and to be true because of these things. One of the things that I would point to is, like, you know, when I was diagnosed with cancer, you know, my prayer started out, you know, that first night I was in the hospital, the prayers were, you know, God, you know, get rid of this, remove this from my body, because obviously you've made a mistake. I should not have cancer, you know, and fix this, please, now. Let's get this under control. And over the last 7 years, it's the times of prayer and the times of quiet, the times of meditation, it's been, okay, God, help me to see you in the midst of this journey. And that is a totally different
Give me the strength.
Give me the wisdom to know what is the next thing that you want me to do, or the next thing you want me to say. Help me to somehow find the ability to do that, and to be at peace with everything that's left undone. And that is a totally different way of praying and being at peace with it. And I don't know that outside of my relationship with God that I ever would have got there. I think it would have always been, okay, let's go. Fix this. You've made a mistake. I should not have cancer. Because that's kind of how we, that's the ego side of it, looking at me saying, look, this is not right.
Well, I have to say this, and maybe I shouldn't, but I fully believe that prayer works.
Oh, absolutely.
I have no doubt about that. But I just, as a scientist, I have to say, I'm not sure that proves the existence of God.
The placebo effect type of thing?
I don't know what you want to call it.
I don't know what you want to call it, Nick, but I just, you know, time and time again, I can go back to different places where, yeah, the Spirit of God has spoken into my life, and I believe it was the Spirit of God speaking into my life, and has guided me and directed me, and for me, I'm at peace with that.
I hear you. And there was a time in my life when I used to pray every day, and I prayed most of the time for other people.
Yeah.
And I believe those prayers were answered.
Yeah.
I truly do. And so, what can I say?
Well, there you go.
Although we've had some interesting conversations about what is God.
I know.
Yeah.
But that's a topic for another podcast.
Day? Okay. All right. Well, guys, listen, thank you very much, both of you, for being here.
Thank you.
Tim, especially, thank you for sharing your story and helping us to think about things maybe a little bit differently and a little bit more broadly. Mm-hmm. And Nick, thank you for bringing Tim here.
You're welcome.
And having this conversation.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, good. And so everybody else, as you're listening here, just as you've been listening to us talk and as you've been listening to us share, I hope you can feel there's this tension between the personal pursuit of spiritual growth and a deepening spiritual life. And sometimes what we see in some of the institutional churches, some of what we may have experienced in the past, some of the hurt and pain that may have found its way onto our doorstep because people of faith have said certain things, acted in certain ways. And let me just encourage you that, both of those things can be true. Like we can be growing spiritually, and we can also experience hurt and pain from spiritual people. And don't let that discourage you. Don't let that shut the door. Don't let that cause you to stop pursuing for you is a deepening and a growing spiritual life, because we all believe that the Spirit is alive and well and at work in our world in some ways. And if we could get our egos out of the way, and if we could pay more attention to that spiritual voice, that we would grow, and that we would be more aware. Of what the Spirit is doing in our lives. And so until next time, may you just be abundantly aware of the Spirit of God alive and well and at work in your world.